And welcome back. The talk out of Washington these days is of little other than sequestration, which is scheduled to go into effect on Friday. That's when $85 billion in across-the-board cuts will be made to government agencies and programs. How will we be affected in our region, and when? We've asked the Beacon's Rob Koenig to join us from Washington to talk about that. Rob, nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Don.
Well, I guess the first question is, as the hours dwindle down to a precious few, is anything new on this?
Well, there'll be a vote in the Senate. I think Democrats have produced a proposal for what they call a balanced approach that would combine some cuts with closing some tax loopholes like big oil loopholes and the so-called Buffett rule that would create a minimum tax for millionaires. But Roy Blunt was just on the phone with reporters, and he said that's a non-starter. It's not going to pass. So at the moment, it looks as if the sequester will indeed start kicking in on Friday. There's a meeting Friday at the White House between President Obama and congressional leaders. But once again, Senator Blunt said that's a non-starter. It's just for show.
And of course, it's happening some 12 hours or more after this thing goes into effect.
That's right. It'll start kicking in Friday morning. Now, many of the cuts will be made, at least in terms of federal employees, by means of so-called furloughs. In other words, forcing people to work a four-day week, only being paid for 4 days instead of five. However, by law, they have to give at least a one-month notice before they actually impose the furloughs. So we do have a month or so before these things kick in.
Yeah, I read your piece in the Beacon today, and April 4 is the deadline for that to kick in.
Assuming that they give notice by Monday, which would typically be the day when they'd start, they would have to wait a month. So some people might be furloughed, such as Scott Air Force Base has more than, I think, 4,000 civilian employees. And there's talk that some of them, at least, if not most, might be asked to accept furloughs. Now, it wouldn't apply to the uniformed personnel. As I understand it, they are currently exempted.
Well, 4,000 at Scott Air Force Base is the potential there. I know that brand-new Congressman Enyart has been over there and talking with folks. Clearly, he and Senator Durbin are working very, very hard, or would like to work very, very hard to prevent that from happening.
Yes. As you know, Congressman Enyart used to be head of the National Guard in Illinois, so he's quite a bit of expertise, and he's on the House Armed Services Committee. But frankly, I think they're powerless at the moment to do much about it because this is something that's already in the law. The only way to change it would be to change the law. And at the moment, we seem to be in our usual impasse mode here in Washington. Republicans, even behind closed doors, I'm told, they can't really agree on how to respond to the administration proposal, which is to combine some, in effect, revenue or tax increases with cuts. There's one plan that I think Senator Blunt would support, which is to give the administration a little bit more leeway in how it directs the cuts. In other words, to still mandate the same amount of cuts, about 2.4% of the total federal budget, but to allow them to shift it around in a way that it's not so harmful to various services such as education, such as military work, such as food inspection, that sort of thing.
You mentioned the furloughs and the fact that they could it could take a month from whenever. Well, it could take until at least April 4th before those things could kick in. There have been a lot of accusations from Republicans that the administration is using scare tactics to try to win support. What's going to be happening immediately then? If the furloughs don't start for at least a month, what's going to happen Friday if that's going to be a problem for us?
Well, I think one thing that would happen is that some agencies obviously contract out a lot of the work, and I think they would be very quickly putting a hold on contracts that aren't currently, you know, valid. In other words, they won't be renewing certain contracts until they do receive the money. And then the other thing is I think they'll almost entirely, all of them, will impose hiring freezes. So if you're applying for a job at USDA or one of the big federal departments, you may face a freeze. Now, there are exemptions for jobs that are important to national security and that sort of thing. And so, there's quite a bit of discretion among the various departments as to how actually they administer the cuts. But the fact is they have to make these cuts between now and the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. There's no way out unless Congress passes a law changing it.
What about an outfit like Boeing, which has a very large presence here? And there are certainly national security components there. Is Boeing likely to be affected right away?
I don't know if it'll be affected immediately, because Boeing obviously has huge contracts in St. Louis, at least, to build the FA-18 Hornet and the Growler and other aircraft. However, it may affect the next round of contracts. In other words, right now their assembly line is functioning, as I understand it, at pretty much full speed. They may have to start slowing things down. I'm not positive exactly when that kicks in. My guess is it doesn't kick in immediately on Friday, but certainly by the end of the fiscal year, when you talk about contracts for the next fiscal year starting October 1st, you could indeed see a slowdown. Now, and it's Boeing's decision whether to lay off people or not. It just depends on what other orders they get from abroad, et cetera, for these aircraft.
Well, again, if we're talking about the end of the fiscal year, it doesn't make the situation sound as dire as some people have implied it will be. It gives people a couple of months to figure this thing out.
Yeah, I think that let's say there's lots of talk about tax returns that there may be a slowdown in getting the money back from the feds. Well, that could be the case. I mean, people file their returns. Some have filed now, but they have to file by mid-April. If the furloughs don't start at the Internal Revenue Service until early April, indeed, there could be a bit of a slowdown in how quickly they process the tax returns. The same thing goes with FDA inspection or USDA inspection at meat processing facilities. It's not going to hit right away, but it will eventually cause a slowdown because people are only working 4 days a week and only getting paid for 4 days a week. So I think that it's not like a government shutdown in which everything shuts down. You won't be able to visit the arch or whatever. It's a slowdown, and it comes in a slow process. Some people in Congress think that the real deadline actually is March 27th, and that's when the continuing resolution that funds the government and keeps the whole government operating expires. And if that turns out to be a problem and the government does shut down, it would be on March 27th.
Let's talk about that for a moment. That's what would be necessary to avoid that would be a continuing resolution, I guess it's called, to keep everything funded. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you'd have some sort of a budget in place, but in recent years, it just hasn't happened. The Congress has just kept with these continuing resolutions that keep the government agencies funded at previous levels. Now, obviously, once the sequester kicks in, the levels have gone down. And between now and March 27th, there'll be considerable negotiation as to under what circumstances the Congress allows the government to continue operating at what level of funding. So I think that there could be like a retroactive provision inserted into the new continuing resolution that would give the Pentagon and perhaps other agencies a little bit more flexibility in how they implement the cutbacks. But the Republicans seem to be insistent that level of cutbacks be maintained, the 2.4% of total federal budget be cut. And that's between now and September 30th. That's, as you said earlier, about $85 billion.
Do you have any sense that this is something one side or the other really wants, is to bring these two things together, March 27th, hold out on the sequester or maintain the sequester until March 27th and then try to figure both of these issues out at the same time?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of activity behind the scenes between now and March 27th. There will be some votes probably this week in the Senate. I don't know about the House. But from what I'm told, it just doesn't stand a chance. The only thing that I think would stand a chance this week would be a Republican-backed proposal that might give the White House or the administration a bit more flexibility on how to implement the cuts, which in theory would allow them to avoid too many furloughs at, say, defense installations such as Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri, Scott Air Force Base, Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. That's a possibility that could happen. My guess is that even that doesn't happen because you have just complete disagreement on how to approach the program. I asked Senator Blunt today why he would oppose the so-called balanced approach, that is, getting rid of some of these loopholes that would bring more revenue in. And his feeling is, and it's true of many Republicans, is that increasing taxes, which in effect it would do, would have a worse long-term impact on the economy than cutting spending. Now many economists disagree with that. In fact, the feeling is that if the sequester is fully implemented and not changed, that the slow economic recovery in this country is going to get even slower and may even stop in its tracks because of this.
Do you have any sense, talking with people from our delegations, that there is any kind of crack in the partisan unity on this thing? I mean, everything seems to be straight down party lines, and yet we are hearing about some Republican governors who are trying to apply some pressure to get this thing resolved and fast.
Yeah, I think there is some dissension among the ranks, both among Republicans and Democrats. Senator McCaskill talked to reporters also this morning, and she said that she would support some sort of a compromise on this. I mean, she agrees that spending needs to be cut. Almost everyone will say that. But she does think that there need to be some sort of new revenues coming in. The one area which a huge amount of money could be saved over the next 10 years would be somehow revamping some of the huge entitlement programs, not so much Social Security as Medicare and Medicaid. However, the Democrats have stood firm, at least recently, in not wanting any major changes to that. There is a possibility of implementing what's called a chain CPI on Social Security that would modify the way that inflation is adjusted in future Social Security payments. And that's been one thing that even the White House has considered in the past, but no one seems to be talking about it right now.
One thing I think we should point out is the fact that neither Social Security nor Medicare are going to be affected at all by the sequester when it's implemented.
That's correct. I think there's a tiny amount of entitlement programs would be affected, but very little. The figures that I have are defense, which accounts for about 18% of our federal budget, would be affected by about 38% of these cuts, and non-defense discretionary federal spending, that is no entitlements, which accounts for about 16% of the budget, would be hit by about 43% of the cuts. And that's why you have the danger of some federal education programs being cut back fairly substantially, although most of those education programs wouldn't feel it, I don't think, fully until the new school year starts in September.
There again, you know, with all the dire forecasts, it looks like most of what's going to be happening is fairly well down the road, which I suppose would give a lot of people hope that this thing could be resolved before some of the most dramatic things happen.
I think there is certainly hope that even if the total percentage of budget cuts remains about the same, that there would be more flexibility in how to implement them. In fact, there are some Republicans who would just like to give Obama pretty much a free hand on that. And that way, that allows him to take some of the blame on the public reaction to some of these cutbacks. He's going around the country now, and he was at a Virginia shipyard yesterday and trying to raise awareness of how this is going to hurt people, workers at federally funded facilities, et cetera. And apparently he's going to continue to do that. And the Republicans say it's just a road trip and he's avoiding heart-to-heart negotiations with them. But I think the White House position is, look, the Republicans aren't budging. I mean, they're not negotiating. So why shouldn't I go around the country and point out what the problems are going to be?
The polls seem to indicate that he is having some effect in this roadshow of his.
Yeah, the polls I've seen, I think the Washington Post had a poll 2 or 3 days ago saying that more Americans would blame the Republicans than would blame the White House if indeed sequester starts hitting. However, quite a few of them would blame both equally. If you look at the origins of the sequester, as you know, it was part of the negotiations for the 2011 Budget Control Act. And the original idea actually came from the White House, according to Bob Woodward, the author and journalist, although Republican leaders accepted it. So it's not as if it's entirely an Obama idea. It was just one of the triggers, which no one ever thought would actually be pulled, because they thought there would be other ways to reach a bipartisan consensus on how to reduce the deficit. Well, unfortunately, those other ways never worked. And so we end up finally with this trigger being pulled on Friday, and we'll see what happens.
What a crazy way to legislate, and what a crazy way to govern. I mean, I can't imagine that people aren't, well, I know they are because the polls indicate it, look at this and just shake their heads and say, these folks have gone nuts.
Yeah, I mean, people have felt that way for quite a while about the way the government is operating. It just seems to be one impasse after another. You do get a few things done. You know, Hagel was finally confirmed as the new Secretary of Defense yesterday. But on these fiscal matters, I mean, there's such a dividing line, and it's not only in the Congress, it's among the American public. Senator McCaskill said today that her theory is the problem is that members of Congress are all concerned about primary opposition. That is, Republicans are concerned about opposition from the far right, and the Democrats are more concerned about primary opposition from the far left. And so you have fewer people who are taking middle ground positions, which she would like to occupy.
Yeah, redistricting could be blamed, I think, for a very large part of the problem we're having right now, given the way mm-hmm. these districts have been reformed.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, certainly if you look at Missouri, that's been the case. And I also think Illinois, although Illinois districts have been redrawn by Democrats, but you have a similar problem.
Yeah, well, whoever is in control of the legislature gets to draw the districts. Hey, one thing I did want to ask you about when we were talking about impact of the sequester, and that is Lambert. We haven't discussed that. A lot of folks say they're, you know, concerned about whether or not they should even be thinking about flying after Friday.
Yeah, well, I think that the in terms of the air controllers, that their work would be considered a security-related thing. I don't think they're going to stop the air controllers or furlough them. They may cut the budget to some extent. I think there may be delays, though, more delays. Once the furloughs would kick in, say, at the TSA and those who are involved in airport security, and you have fewer people working there doing the security, then there may be longer lines there, and people are going to get frustrated. They already have long lines at the airport. I think that's one area where you could see problems. And I think once the sequester cuts start really kicking in, and once people are told they can only work 4 days a week, then you're going to see incredible amounts of pressure on Congress. And hopefully at that point, we'll see some sort of concerted activity here on Capitol Hill. I'm just, my guess is that that point isn't going to be reached for at least a month, maybe even a little bit longer.
Well, if we're not having enough fun now with the sequester coming in and with the continuing resolution situation that will surface on March 27th, then we have the debt ceiling problem, which raises its head in May.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they obviously included the debt ceiling in the so-called fiscal cliff deal on New Year's Day this year. But once again, we face it later this spring. And that could be another option for Republicans and Democrats to fight and reach impasse. And frankly, for the economy and the recovery to be damaged. And I think that's what many national economists worry about, is that you've had one after another of these so-called crises that affects public confidence. It affects the confidence of investors and even of other foreign governments when they look at our country and they wonder if our system is functioning.
Well, we certainly are being looked at and to a large degree being laughed at by a number of countries. That has become quite obvious in recent weeks and months. Rob Koenig, thanks so much for being with us. I know you've had a lot of work to do with all of this going on. We appreciate your spending some time with us, and thanks very much. We'll be talking to you again soon, I hope.
Thank you, Don.
Right. I'll remind our audience that Rob's reports can be read with regularity in the St. Louis Beacon at stlbeacon.org. He has a nice piece in there today with regard to the sequestration, so look it up at stlbeacon.org. That's all for us today. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we're going to be talking about the food crisis in the St. Louis region and about a documentary film showing how hunger poses serious economic, social, and cultural implications for our nation. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.